Hello and welcome to The Awakening for Scorpio. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer, speaking to you on Boxing Day 2024, 26th of December. This is probably the most sensitive of the readings in this series, by which I mean that the transits you'll be experiencing, and to some extent are and have been for a little while, influence very fragile parts of your angles of your solar chart. There are three main transit groups that I'm tracking. The first is Pluto and Aquarius, and the second is the Aries group, which is a little more straightforward for you, and then the third is Uranus going through Gemini, your eighth house. The Pluto and Aquarius part involves Pluto moving through the angle of your solar chart that involves security base, family, household matters. And because you have Aquarius here, your feelings influence a great many people. And so this has to be handled with total consciousness. There is no way to get around it. The power is just too great to approach it with any kind of half awake or half aware situation. And you've experienced some of what this transit's about because it's been warming up for a while. It started warming up in March of 2023, and then in an unusual way for Pluto, faded in and out of Capricorn, and then landed fully in Aquarius this past November. So you have a sense of what this is about, though I want to do my best to kind of translate the imagery for you in ways that might make it a little more practical or accessible. The Uranus transit, which doesn't get going until mid-year, but has a predecessor in the form of Uranus in Taurus, involves the house most associated with commitments, with these kind of sacred bonds that join families and that, create estates and that are where people merge their individuality and their individual needs into a kind of a very private collective. It's a small collective, but it's a collective. And the thing about the eighth house is that even though it looks like any one of the other little slices on the paper, pizza slices on the paper, the subject matter is highly sensitive and confidential, and it's the kind of stuff that we don't really talk about much with others, and it can involve the secrets that are kept within families. It has all kinds of implications associated with power dynamics. Power dynamics often involve sex and money. And the bottom line of the eighth is that the power dynamics there involve death. Death and dowry is the theme of the eighth house. And so to have Uranus entering this zone, Uranus being this feisty, rebellious, revolutionary influence indicates that you have to be aware that there's going to be a bull in the china shop. And what you do with that bull is a different matter. But if you know that it's going to be there, you'll be a lot better off. In my opening notes for Scorpio here, which I wrote last night after all the written readings done, and now I'm taking a fresh look at the charts and the whole idea of 2024 for these audio readings, I wrote that people are afraid of Scorpio. One of my theories of why people are afraid of astrology is because of Scorpio. It's a little like cops in astrology. There's almost no cops who believe in astrology. You can maybe a couple read the New York Post horoscope here and there, but they believe in the full moon, and it is like that with Scorpio, that people don't necessarily believe in astrology, but Scorpio makes them a little nervous. There's no one who hasn't had some kind of a witchy telepathic incident of a Scorpio reading their mind or having some kind of a remote viewing episode. And I consider Scorpio to be proof that astrology is real for the people who would rather that it not be real. And what makes people nervous, and, forgive me if I'm saying things that make no sense or that you worked out 20 lifetimes ago. I think it's often true that once someone gets on your bad side, that's pretty much it. And I just want to propose that if that in any way describes you, to ease back on this and consider that there is a better way. The most annoying line in A Course in Miracles is basically you have a choice between being right and being happy. Put in those terms, in that way that A Course in Miracles filters out all the extraneous rationalization, that's pretty clear. And what I'm suggesting here is that you abandon any notion of a scorched earth emotional policy. The temptation of anger is being right. The temptation of resentment is revenge. But these things only turn back on you after making it difficult or impossible for people around you to be at peace with you. And look, I'm not in your life and I'm not in your body, but I'm here to say that you do not want people to be afraid of you. You want people to respect you, and you want them to love you for the kindnesses that they do for them, and eventually to notice who you are. And to really make that a way of life. I mean, there have been plenty of times where other approaches seem to work. Whatever work meant, work usually means get the result that you want, whatever that is, to create something to happen. But right now, your chart is radically amplified. It's amplified because one of your core planets, Pluto, has entered this angular house where it has the power to help everyone and everything around you evolve, and it can be equally destructive. Uranus entering Gemini, eighth place, has the ability to create inventive solutions to mutual situations that are going to take creativity to work out. The past weighs heavily on houses 4 and 8. They're both houses involving legacy. They're both very important houses involving family, 4th being the father's line, and the 8th bringing in the in-laws and all of their people. So the 4th kind of spirals down into antiquity through the line of fathers. The 10th spirals into antiquity through the line of mothers. And that is very active right now. Also, we'll come to that next when we talk about Mars retrograde. And so to have Uranus going into the 8th is not just about you. Pluto in the 4th is not just about you. It's as if the entire past is up for grabs, and everything that that people have in the environment that you co-create that helps them feel safe and secure is at stake. Both 4 and 8 deal with matters of security that is familial in nature. House 4 through lineage, House 8 through marriage. Astrology presents this coherent map to existence, and even if it's not true, you get a proposal, and this is what seems to be going on. And with the past weighing so heavily on these two places, it's important to say that the fact that you may have been hurt by some situation in the past, whether involving someone you're with today or someone you were with in the past, or involving your parents in some way, does not grant you any special privilege or right other than to talk out your situation in therapy and see if you can get to the real source of your feelings. Another one of those Course in Miracle-isms is, I'm never upset for the reason I think. This is one that I have found to be so true so often that I just now assume that it is right. Scorpio is also famous for psychoanalyzing people. And if that describes you, I would like to urge you to put that on pause and to never ascribe motives to another person. The danger of projection is enormous under your current astrology. One way to read the chart is to work with houses 5 through 8 as something called the zone of projection. And all of those houses are activated, including 4. It's almost like the entire Western quadrant of your chart is activated. Aquarius, well, Leo all the way around through Aquarius. And that Western hemisphere of the chart is about where others enter. It's about them more than it's about you. But the danger of the entire Western hemisphere is projection. And the discipline is knowing what projection is and you know, doing this very difficult thing of taking full ownership of your projections and claiming them, and how do I say this? And working it out that way. The challenge here is that that doesn't really feel very powerful. It doesn't feel like you're very influential if you're spending your time seeking an understanding of yourself and your projections and your perceptions, rather than attempting to ascribe motive to other people. It can take some time before you realize that that's where your true power lies. And I am so sorry to say that this thing that particularly American society, I haven't lived in European society now for almost 20 years, so I don't really know what's going on there. But here in American society, we do not have therapy anymore. That thing that existed in the 60s and 70s, and where the holdovers who were trained young in those days, who may have continued their practices, are now largely gone or retired. And not only that, the culture is not supporting a therapy approach. The culture is supporting a palliative approach in the form of, doing whatever gets instant gratification. We've become this kind of DoorDash society, the pizza profile, where you just tap a button and sit there and wait, and the pizza just shows up supposedly exactly like you want it. And this is not how humans grow. And growth is essential for relationships to be safe places for everyone. And the thing that I have not mentioned until now, and I've been writing about Pluto and Aquarius now for 2.5, since 2021, really, is that Pluto going into your fourth house now will be there till 2043, till it starts to transition into Pisces, raises as a primary question the matter of safety in your childhood home. And I'm not saying that you were not safe, but what I am saying is that I keep hearing and reading accounts of people who say they were not safe, who are then responding to that feeling of unsafety with what about to completely wild projections, which do nothing to improve their state of safety or to heal the condition itself. Essentially, we are being conditioned by a diversity of factors to believe that rage alone will solve our problems and that rage alone is justified. It's really the deep, dark heart of the anti-60s here that we're in. It is to me terrifying that it is socially acceptable for anyone to be quoted in, for example, the Atlantic Monthly, saying, "Kill all men." The therapist in me says, "Let's talk about your dad." But this person is a figment of a magazine article, but I am tuned in enough to these dimensions of consciousness and online life and what remains of 3D real life to know that this is the rage is a widespread experience, and the rage is the result of the radical disembodiment of digital conditions. The disembodiment is not something you feel like when you can't get into a yoga pose that used to be easy. That's not disembodiment. Disembodiment is when your mind is, when one's mind is disconnected from one's incarnate experience, and the first result of that is anger. And the anger is used as a shitty means of attempting to orient in this new electrical dream that we are in. And if you're wondering why there is so much in the way of nonstop random hostility, and I realize that, you know, I've been listening to a lot of radio shows from the 60s and 70s, and, you know, talk radio, and I do recognize that, you know, there's always been this violent quality to American society. And I'm sorry if you live out of the country, but I can only, you know, use real metaphors here. But there's something special going on now where it would seem very easy to sell people on the idea that the only appropriate response to anything is rage. And this is suicidal. This is spiritually suicidal, and it is leading to the profound depths of despair that people are in now. And the sense that there's not a future. I wonder, look, I've personally worked since I was a teenager to build a future for myself. But I'm, you know, I get nervous. I'm getting older. I get nervous sometimes wondering, you know, will I always be able to, you know, pull off these miracles that I do? But for a young person, the idea of the future has got to be terribly destabilizing, because there seems to be no future that's not contained on the internet. And the fourth house, Aquarius, represents the brood. It represents the family. There are young ones involved. And so your attitudes and values, how you respond to these conditions, whether you understand these conditions, and they are not easy to understand, because there's so much bullshit in the way, will make a difference for a lot of people. And your example of remaining in contact with your loving humanity will be the most important thing that you can do for yourself and everyone around you as we enter this stage of both uncertainty and awakening. These are audio readings that I've promised to focus on vocational themes, although for Scorpio and Scorpio Rising, there is just this deeply personal, theme with houses 4 and 8 so active. However, there's lots going on in the work angles of your chart. And those two are a little cautionary, and here's why. So there's two places where we look for most activity. This is from classical astrology into modern, mundane, and psychological astrology. Two places to look initially for matters related to work. The sixth place is what you do every day. It's where physically where you go to work. It is the nature of the service that you perform. And it is, the word I'm using is quotidian. It's a kind of everyday kind of a thing. The ritual de la habitual of Jane's Addiction's fame. And you have a very important sign placed in house number 6, and that is Aries. And the suggestion here is that above all else, you identify with your work. And I have always been very encouraging of Scorpio on this, and the encouragement has come a little bit in the form of for example, you must have work that you completely can get with. There is no being a fake person at work or subverting who you are to do the things you do. And I honestly do not know how people do this. It was hard enough when I was having to write the Pennsylvania Education Law Report when I really wanted to be writing poetry, but at least I was learning journalism and studying law as an editor of Education Law Journal. This is when I was about 25. So I could say, well, I'm not going to do this forever, this is the thing to do now. But to continue with that, and that's on the good side of this spectrum. There are people who are doing all kinds of things that blatantly violate their values and that violate their own personal sense of integrity. You simply cannot be one of them. And I think that it will be easier in the world of finding work, which I know very little about now, but I can surmise that it will be easier than you think to transfer your skills, your talents, and your abilities to something that comports with your values. If you are totally real. I'm going to come back to the transits in this house in a second, because this is really where this is the Aries is the big top in the circus in 2025 and 2026. Pluto is very much in the background, Pluto in Aquarius, but it's angular for you, so it's personal. Uranus hasn't begun yet. So that's not in the foreground. But the three-ring part of the circus is going on in Aries in the sixth, and that has been true since April of 2024. So hold that thought. Let's talk about Leo. So the second house associated with vocation is house number 10. House number 10 is more the long arc of your career. It is more about your highest aspirations and how and whether you meet them. It becomes the house of what you're known for. Because we're doing sun sign astrology, assuming Scorpio sun for you, this comes back to something very personal about you. If you are Scorpio rising, listening to this, you will find information about that highest calling in the house and sign, using this whole sign system, where your sun is. And it's not that hard to get the hang of this. You just have to read a couple of my articles and scratch your head and work it out. But in any event, you have Leo as house 10. And this is Leo in its glory-seeking mode. To place it, kind of a high noon angle of the chart is the equivalent of having a 10th house sun. And that is, you might say, your need to shine like the sun at noon. And so with these two placements, regardless of any planets that may get there, and they are there, you're going to tend to have a very, very strong ego identification with work. This does not make it easy to identify with loving partnership, and it places certain challenges on raising children, because because children are a career. Raising children it has to be a career. And I realize that now society is living in the rubble of what feminism has sold us, and particularly sold women, since the mid-1800s, which is that you can have it all, and that raising children doesn't matter. I mean, this has been the underlying theme of feminism, which is feminism came into full fruition in the 20th century, and is probably the single most important philosophy of the 20th century. I don't mean best by that. I mean influential. And so this has created a massive distortion around the whole matter of family. For a man, Leo 10th does offer quite a bit in the way of opportunity to take pride in parenting. And I think that the silver lining here is potentially that pride. And with Aquarius as the fourth place, the confidence and security of knowing that you've got your people, you've got your tribe. But money is an issue in our times. I mean, there's never been a time when it was not an issue. But, you know, let's put it this way. Most of my job involves writing a horoscope column. We have to maintain something like 11 or 12 or more insurance policies so that I can sit here and talk to you. Now, that's ridiculous. And this is unprecedented historically. Well, this is not just me. I walk into any business and I'm thinking, how are they doing this? Especially small business. And we are living in a time of rampant glamour. That's Leo 10th. And also Aries 6 would count for glamour. And so there are all of these other motives working. And what I'm suggesting here is that you keep your professional aspirations personal, which is to say that you have the option to do abso-fucking-lutely nothing for the appearance of doing it, and to do everything for the sake of doing it well. And I'm probably the only person who said those words today on the planet. We're all about faking it till you make it. And I just don't think that that's, I don't think that's how it works. I think that we have to spend our time in the kitchen, washing dishes. And to be able to write the Planet Waves horoscope, I had to sit there and write the eminently boring Pennsylvania education law report. The New York, California, I had to write three of those damn things. It helps me when I'm handling a client who's got litigation issues, all this legal stuff my mind has been packed with. All right, so here is the activity in these houses. And this is, we are in, I am no fan of Klaus Schwab, but we are in Great Reset territory here. And I don't mean that they're doing it to you, but the thing with the Great Reset is this is about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. This is a real thing, by the way, that the one percenters have been talking about for 10, 20, 30 years. And now the digital is real, so too can be the Great Reset. And the digital crime scene has been Aries. I say that because the main issue with digital is not the gadgets. It is not the content served. It is not the time spent on the screen. It is how we think of who we are. That is Aries. And for you, Aries is parked in the sixth place. It is parked in the house of daily quotidian work. So I'll just keep saying, doing what you do for the sake of doing it well. Now, pretty much everyone alive, unless you're like the 106-year-old guy in France who's lived that long because he drank that red wine that comes from the vineyard near his house and all that. So the 112-year-old lady in Japan. All right. But everybody else has Eris and Aries. And we, therefore, our entire consciousness has been shaped by electrical mass communication, which means that we were born into the planet in a time when humans in advanced Western civilization, not the East, the West, were being reconverted into tribal beings after thousands of years of slowly finding individuality and the concept evolving and developing. And I do realize it has kind of trailed off through the 20th century, but it is largely gone now. That pretty much everything is organized in cults and tribes. And now Chiron has entered Aries as of 2018-19. That came with a big fuss. The fuss started in 2017, though there's often a big fuss associated with the transit 1 year before it starts. Or, a year, or this in the case of Chiron going into Aries, it was about 6 months. And so there was a big shit show in basically late 17 through late 19, and wars among the people were promulgated, and body strewn places, and nothing is better. However, the influence of Chiron in Aries is detribalizing. It is individualistic. Chiron always stands out as the individual. Chiron is not even really a member of the tribe of the centaurs. He stands out even among the centaurs, who are largely, with the exception of Pholus, who may be, myths are strange, and the Chiron and the Pholus myth may be, have origins in the same place. But Pholus is a more passive character, but he's certainly a peaceful character who is minding his business. Besides that, the rest of the 70 or 80 or 90 centaurs documented in Greek mythology are basically a bunch of carousing killers who do things like rape the bride at the wedding. Or, you know, the weddings, it's always at wedding where the centaurs, you know, go wild. That's actually pretty funny. That deserves an article. But Chiron stands apart from that. Chiron was a teacher, mentor, teacher of medicine, the first teacher of medicine, taught medicine to Asclepius, the god of medicine, was personally mentored by Apollo. And so he has very high lineage, was an immortal who gave up his immortality. And so the influence of Chiron in Aries has been about individuality and finding, I think, I would suggest looking back to around 2018 for the, I always love tracking people's careers against their transits, but, and I know that, you know, we all lost a couple of years of our life in 2020 through 23 or so, but to consider the trajectory of your professional existence from, let's say, 2017 through the present. What has changed for you? What values and attitudes have changed? Whatever that is comes to a peak in the spring of 2025 through the spring of 2026. This is the Chiron-Eris conjunction. This conjunction is momentous. Whenever Eris is in Aries, it happens twice because Eris is in Aries for 130 years. It takes Chiron 50.7 years to orbit, so therefore Chiron can orbit twice while Eris is in Aries. And so there will be the second conjunction of Chiron and Eris in Aries. The first one for this Eris and Aries cycle was 71-72. Momentous time in history. There should be a whole field of early 70s studies, you know, and the astrologers of the, I mean, the astrologers in the 60s, I think, were largely not paying attention to Uranus and Pluto in a conjunction that was like, I really wonder what it would have been like to be an astrologer in the 1960s with everything, you know, going insane day after day, and you know, the LSD soaking through society, and another you know, disembodiment experience. But in any event, we're about to have a Chiron-Eris conjunction, and to me, this can easily be about you truly finding your calling. And by calling, I mean less the kind of calling what you want to be known for. It's very important to distinguish that theme of the 10th from the theme of the 6th. What they have in common is that they're both action-oriented, but the 10th is so much more visible than the 6th. The 6th is not visible. And I would caution against the temptation, I guess I said this a little while ago, to do anything for the sake of visibility, being seen or known for that thing. There's part of you that's quite happy being behind the scenes, and even in situations where you are of necessity in leadership, whether corporate or out front, most of the important stuff that you're doing is behind the scenes, and in some way, involving keeping people, happy and working. So, Chiron Eris, I wish I could travel back in time to experience that. I mean, I write a lot about the late 1960s. I would say that by the time we get to the Woodstock Festival, by the time we get to the Kent State incident, the second Nixon reelection, the Watergate scandal, that is all Chiron, Eris, and Aries. Think about the major upheavals that these things represented. Now, I know it's easy to tune this out and be like, whatever. But major upheavals. Now, for you, this is less about, it could be upheaval, but I think it's more about threading the needle of your true calling. And the disruptive element of this is, this may be deep. This may be something that requires you to change a lot of things. Now, Uranus and Pluto are going to help you change a lot of things if you want that influence. It's just very important to be wholly mindful of the influences you're having on the people around you, which is profound. I've been looking at these charts now. I've been like living with them, for day in, day out for 3 months. It's basically the same chart turned 12 ways. None of the configurations is as personally sensitive as yours. And so this is why the relational aspect is so important, and why I would strongly suggest enlisting the help, guidance, and support of the people around you. Though they may fear you, what they really want is to respect you and to trust you, and you will engender that trust and that respect by involving them in what you're doing. Now, the Chiron-Eris conjunction and all of its, transformational potential, which is pretty wild. I mean, I can't wait to see what this is really going to be about. And I say that, reaching for my seatbelt, sitting here in my desk chair, is met by two planets entering Aries. The Chiron-Eris thing has gone on for a while. That's been brewing basically since 2018. All right, fine. But Saturn and Neptune entering Aries is a whole new thing. And part of what is so new about it is going to be the speed, the instantaneous ways this manifests, seemingly out of nowhere. That's Pisces. Suddenly is activated, accentuated, essentially thrust onto the global personal stage, just like that. It's difficult to tell what, which of these two influences it's going to, when you're thinking, well, what's this about? You have to pretty much go, theme by theme. You have to sort it out. But for you, the beauty of this is that this gives you a lot of resources to work with. The resources are being delivered to your sixth place, and they will help you clear the way to do what you need to do. And, I mean, I'm not here to imply that you're going to become like the Partridge Family, where like the whole family, you know, becomes a rock band and goes on tour. But that's actually not a bad model to think of, you know, what this may be about. I say that because Saturn rules Aquarius. Saturn shows up in your sixth. You may ask yourself, well, what would I do if this was the Partridge Family? But seriously, there's the indication of responsibility and of the formation of something very new. And remember that the territory where Saturn and Neptune are entering is the distinctly private, personal territory of Aries. And for you, the sixth, a somewhat private place. And the vastly public connotation of Aries by way of the Aries point, that first degree of Aries. And also, Aries reaches into the collective because it is the sum total of all of our self-concept. So I lack the imagination, and plus you're not sitting here. I mean, if you were, you know, we could, you know, brainstorm this out, but I would suggest that you do that. And ask yourself the question, in this rapidly changing world, in this world of so much outrageous uncertainty, where we have all, I mean, I mentioned LSD. McLuhan, my favorite philosopher, once said that computers are LSD for the business community. And what he meant was that when people got around computers, they were tripping balls. He observed this. He was a college professor all through the 50s and 60s. He saw that whole thing, the beatniks, the hippies, and all this. And then he was a famous consultant through much of the 60s and 70s, hanging out with IBM executives. And I'm sure he went to all the right parties. I would bet anything that he did not drop acid, but I would bet just as much that he was around a lot of very powerful people who did. So he knew what he was talking about when he said that the computer is LSD for the business community. Well, I've got news for everyone. We're all tripping balls right now because we are all surrounded by, carrying in our pockets, populated in every room. Heck, I'm sitting in an office that has, I'm trying to whack it down. Three computers running, three printers running, et cetera, not counting laptops, phones. Well, we are all tripping balls. And the imposition of Saturn into this environment, I think, is going to be a major wake-up call. And the imposition of Neptune enters first. Neptune moves slower, but in its cycle, it's going to get to Aries first. Saturn catches up. They retrograde back, and they form a conjunction on the Aries point in 26. That's freaking wild. That there is the possibility to really come up with something new here, completely new. Two more points, just to quickly sum up the planetary retrogrades. Venus retrograde traces the path of Saturn and Neptune in the spring. I think that's from March into April. And so if you're wondering what this is going to be about, you have Venus to use as a probe into that time zone, that time plot, it is running vanguard of Saturn and Neptune. And so it's a sensitive, sensory, planetary influence, and you can get a feeling for what kind of territory you'll be entering. Mars retrograde. One last point. I probably wrote a lot about this, but Mars retrograde in your reading. right now society is directing way, way, way too much anger at men. And I see very little gratitude for the men who keep the power grid running and 50,000 other things that men do, including, though not all men, the tendency of a great many men to really feel a deep soul need to take care of basically the women and the children. And I hope that you know men like this, but in terms of your own personal psychology, if you're wondering what's really going on with you and what the source of your insecurity is, I would recommend having a long talk with your mother. This is a rare opportunity with Mars retrograding back into Cancer. If your mother's not around, you know, evaluate her life and the ways in which she handed you her unprocessed psychological legacy and essentially left it for you to deal with. Okay. That is what I have for you for your 2025-26 annual edition of Planet Waves. Thank you for your trust with these deeply sensitive matters and your ongoing business. Much love, and bye for now.